14. A Divergence.
And be sure to enlist the aid of mages well-versed in the manipulation channel of power. Noctile mines are extremely resilient. The enthralling component used when opening the portal to the Vizierm expanse will not sway a Noctilius's will.
From Kulvinar Vryum's Bestiary for Conjurers, page 49. Ildin saw that the mountain housing Tardalim was exactly as Vaim had described during that meeting aboard the Gibran. It towered higher, higher than anything he had ever seen. His illusion, a perfect replica of himself, stood at the precipice of the gorge surrounding the mountain. The mountainside was 5 or 6 city blocks away. Amandal had claimed the gorge was 2 grand finials wide, and that estimate was no exaggeration. The gorge also seemed to spread eternally to the right and left, with no way around it. Even the bottom of the gorge appeared to stretch on forever. If there were a floor to that massive canyon, it lay beyond in abysmal blackness. But wouldn't sunlight reach the bottom? Unnerved, Ildin glided his illusion into the air, searching the canyon wall for a structure housed within it. Bayam claimed that the only way across the gorge was to extend a bridge from a gatehouse nestled within the canyon wall. But according to her, the gatehouse could only be accessed from a network of caves. Calamir had asked how deep the gatehouse was situated, but Bayam didn't know. Ildin had passed a cave halfway between the camp and the gorge, but there were tracks leading to it, tracks like those they had seen in the canyon 7 days before. Upon hearing Ildin's report of the tracks, Calamir devised an alternate plan. Why meander through a maze when they could simply search along the gorge to find the gatehouse? Then they could descend to the gatehouse by use of magic. Ildin thought his argument sound, but Vaim didn't. Mindalarnian idiocy. He was careful not to mutter his thoughts as he stood within Vaim's tent where the expedition's leaders had gathered. Ildin's illusion glided along the canyon wall for a while, but he didn't see the gatehouse or anything else for that matter. He expected to see a grand palisade rising from the mountainside, with towers and other fortifications befitting a place named after the Halls of Damnation. But there was nothing besides rock, snow, and ice. "Do we even know what this gatehouse looks like?" he asked. His voice echoed within both the gorge and the tent.
"I told you this won't work," Vaim spat, the fury in her voice apparent.
"Keep searching," Calamir ordered.
Ildin nodded, sending his illusion farther west. He had plenty of time to search for the gatehouse. The expedition was at least 6 days' journey from the gorge.
"You won't find it," Vaim insisted. "Now let's settle this foolishness." Her voice was firm. "Do you see anything that is made of the same crystal as the Ishari city?"
That question sparked an argument between Vaim and Calamir. Ildin pushed their bickering aside, focusing on the gorge. He closed his eyes and brought his hands to his ears. It was a common practice used by illusionists to immerse themselves within their illusions.
"I don't," Ildin thought in reply to Vaim's question.
His illusion shot toward the towering mountain, allowing him to see more of the gorge's northern wall. He saw nothing but shadows. If there were a crystal structure like those in the Ishari city, then there would be a blue light shining amid the darkness. But there wasn't. Ildin strained his focus, searching farther westward, but there was no light along the canyon wall. The illusion spun, searching to the east. The gorge turned, wrapping around the mountain, but of what little he saw, the eastern side of the northern wall was also devoid of any crystal structures.
"Where could it be?" he muttered.
The illusion hovered as Ildin puzzled out the predicament in his mind. All the while, Vaim and Calamir continued arguing. Ildin turned his illusion toward the abysmal blackness veiling the bottom of the gorge.
Could that be an illusion of some kind?
If Tardalim were a home to ancient Tevis Rawls, wouldn't it make sense to hide those Tevis Rawls with a Tevis Rawl of some kind? That notion was something only heard of in fanciful tales, but the expedition thus far had been filled with things most thought were myth or legend.
"Fly!"
Ilden commanded, and the illusion darted into the gorge, diving toward the blackness. Kalamir was not pleased with the idea of traversing the caves, nor were most of the squad leaders in Mistress Rudal's tent. It was too risky. Besides, they had enough Barjanists to create ramps large enough for everyone to descend into the gorge.
"We must travel through the caves," insisted Mistress Rudal.
She leaned over the table, glowering at Kalamir.
"There's no telling where the gatehouse is located or how deep it is within the gorge."
Kalamir wanted to snap at her, but he bit his tongue.
"Insolent woman," he thought.
"He said there were only three pairs of tracks,"
she said, gesturing to Mr. Saterin. The young illusionist had his eyes closed and his hands over his ears. He was obviously ignoring the argument.
"If there are Yeltis in the caves, they will be hibernating. If we run into them, we will have the element of surprise on our side."
Kalamir shook his head.
"I've heard the tales of Yeltis. They are dangerous creatures, and I will not risk the lives of any more of my men. We use the ramps."
Mistress Rudal bowed her head in frustration, grumbling to herself. "But then we risk an attack while searching Tardalim," Lieutenant Birain said decisively. "The Yeltis will soon awaken from their hibernation, probably before we finish our search."
"I don't see the problem," Kalamir replied. "From what you've said, the bridge across the gorge isn't always extended. As I see it, we simply retract the bridge once we reach the reliquary. And when we're finished, we'll have the Barjanists block off the gatehouse from the caves while we make our ascent."
"But what if we can't retract the bridge?" Dardel asked. "Perhaps we should go after these Yeltis," the lieutenant said.
"We can keep a watch on the bridge," Kalamir replied, "with at least one Barjanist blocking it. If these monsters decide to attack, the Barjanist can waylay them until we can get—"
"No!"
Mistress Rudal shouted, slamming a fist on the table.
"You're being bullheaded, Kalamir. The caves are the only way to reach the gatehouse. The texts we have at the Hillenard claim as much."
So insistent, Kalamir thought. Certainly they might have to descend a considerable distance into the gorge, but descending a shallow ramp, even one that might be several grand finials long, was better than meandering through a dark cave filled with monsters. He took a deep breath and turned, staring out the open tent doors. As he quelled his frustrations, he saw Miss Tussara running through the camp. She was calling for someone named Silas.
"Wasn't she an Arpranist?"
he wondered. Had someone been injured?
"I don't think your plan is going to work, Commander,"
Mr. Saterin said, his tone wary. Kalamir abruptly turned toward the illusionist.
"Why?"
"There's something barring me from the canyon floor," said Mr. Saterin. "I can't even tell if my illusion is moving. It's like I'm stuck in this blackness."
"Blackness?" Dardel asked.
"At the bottom of the gorge," Mr. Saterin answered.
"Well, maybe not at the bottom. Do you think there could be some type of Tevis roll shielding the canyon floor?" Several squad leaders laughed in amusement. Lieutenant Birain looked to Mistress Rudal for an answer, but the Mindalonian scholar simply narrowed her eyes.
"Are you sure you can't breach this blackness?" Kalamir asked.
"I've been trying for a while now."
"If an illusion can't get through, I doubt we can," said a squad leader named Miradin.
Suddenly, Mr. Saterin stumbled backward, blinking and struggling to regain his footing. Miradin caught the young illusionist, helping him balance.
"What happened?" Dardel asked.
"My illusion's gone," Mr. Saterin said, bewildered. "As if it were dispelled."
Each of the squad leaders looked warily at Kalamir.
"This doesn't bode well," Kalamir thought.
If an illusion could be dispelled by this blackness, then they might face the same problem with the Barjan ramps. They could cast the ramps in sections, so only part of the ramp would vanish, but what about those on the dispelled barjan? Kalamir set his hands on the table, considering their dilemma. He did not want to venture into those caves. The squad leaders voiced their opinions and argued with one another, but Kalamir ignored them, closing his eyes to ponder the situation. He considered both options, weighing them by how he felt. Fear crept into his mind as his thoughts lingered on the cave, but an even greater fear accompanied the descent into the blackness.
"The caves it is," Kalamir muttered, opening his eyes.
A pleased grin spread across Mistress Rudal's face. She didn't even try to conceal the joy of her triumph.
"But we need to find the Yeltis before we get too far into the caves," Kalamir said. "Mistress Ateran, start scouting the caves. I want to know where those monsters are hibernating. Report your findings to Elaras, so he can sketch a preliminary map."
The young illusionist nodded and stepped outside the tent, uttering an incantation.
"Dardel,"
Kalamir turned to his second in command,
"start taking down the camp."
"Why not send Amandala Remian?" Mistress Rudal asked frankly. "I'm sure he would love the chance to add those Yeltis to his menagerie. If you don't send him, he might hold it against you."
Kalamir narrowed his eyes at the Mandalorian scholar.
"So you want to send Mr. Aramian into harm's way?"
Kalamir had witnessed her advances while traversing the wasteland, but Mr. Aramian didn't seem interested. Instead, he seemed enthralled by Miss Tussara. That had apparently sparked an unrestrained jealousy on the scholar's part. The young mages had grown closer during their shared tasks of defending the expedition. Kalamir had even seen Miss Tussara visiting the conjurer's tent the past night. Had Mistress Rudal noticed that as well?
"I'm sure he can take care of the Yeltis on his own," she said matter-of-factly. "They are hibernating, after all. He simply has to trap them in the Vizirm expanse, that conjurer's void."
The last bit sounded quite demeaning.
"I don't like your tone," Kalamir thought.
"We might even get away without any fighting," said Lieutenant Beraine. "He is quite skilled."
"Shall I send Mr. Aramian ahead, sir?" Dardel asked.
Kalamir shook his head.
"No, we all stay together. I'm not losing another man to the dangers of these wastes. Now let's get this camp packed up. We can break for a midday meal once the caves are cleared."
The squad leaders left the tent, Kalamir following. But Mistress Rudal called to him before he could reach the tent door.
"You made the right choice, Commander. There are powerful Tevisrolls guarding Tardalim. Tell me, have you ever heard of the fate of Merdrais?"
Kalamir stopped and turned around, shaking his head.
"A pity,"
Bayam sighed, turning to face her desk.
"Legend says that the men and women of Merdrais used powerful Tevisrolls to protect themselves and their cities, veiling them in impenetrable barriers, not barjan, mind you. They were effectively hidden from the rest of the world."
Kalamir narrowed his eyes.
"I think this blackness Ildan found was something like those barriers. We wouldn't be able to pass through it, no matter how hard we tried."
"Oh, really?" Kalamir thought. Was she not telling him everything she knew? When the argument about the barjan ramps first arose, she hadn't mentioned the information at the Hillenard.
She only brought it up to cement her position.
"Are you holding anything back?"
he asked, his eyes fixed on her.
"Of course not," she said, still facing her desk.
"I don't believe you," he thought.
Setting his jaw, he exited the tent. As Kalamir crossed the camp, he noticed Miss Tussara again, this time with an unfortunate-looking young woman. Both were running.
"What's their hurry?"
Felinia dashed through the camp, Sylas trailing behind her.
"Over here,"
she said, pointing to a cluster of tents to their right. They darted into the clearing between the tents, finding Ilden and Amandal talking at the tent door, both wearing their thick brown coats.
"Weirdest thing," Ilden said, shaking his head. "It was just gone."
Amandal narrowed his eyes and set his jaw, a thoughtful expression on his face. Her heart did a strange flip.
"Stop that," Felinia chided herself.
"You don't look hurt,"
Silas said, eyeing Amandal.
"I'm not." His eyes settled on Felinia. "I'm fine, really."
Amandal's thoughtful expression turned wolfish. Felinia's face warmed.
"No," she told herself. "He'll have his way with you, then leave."
She knew Amandal's reputation all too well, but he wasn't that bad a man. If she only had their interactions while crossing the wastes to judge by, then falling for him would be easy.
"Well, Felinia said you were bleeding,"
Silas said, stepping toward Amandal. She inspected his side and shoulder.
"I told you I'm fine," Amandal said,
his voice tainted with annoyance. Felinia shook herself from her stupor.
"But you were bleeding, and not a little. You can't be fine."
"Bleeding?"
Commander Kalamir demanded. Felinia spun. The expedition's commander came within arm's reach, then gestured between Felinia and the others.
"What's going on here?"
"When I found Amandal this morning, he was bleeding," Felinia said.
"It happened in my sleep," Amandal said with a shrug.
"Ugh. Why can't you take this seriously, you big oaf?" Felinia thought.
Ilden was trying to hide his surprise, but he wasn't good at concealing his emotions. After all, Felinia had known him for many years, having studied the illusory arts with him.
"Just let me cast a spell to be sure," Silas said.
"I'm fine, Silas," Amandal insisted. "I checked it out after Felinia left to fetch you, and it's all healed up." "That's impossible," Felinia thought.
But how had Amandal received those wounds? His slog-lean coat showed no signs of foul play. Everyone, including Felinia, slept with their coats on. If someone had attacked Amandal, how had they stabbed him without piercing his coat? Besides, wouldn't receiving the wound awake him?
"This is all so strange."
"That blood was wet,"
Felinia said, extending the blood-stained finger of her glove. At that moment, a breeze wisped around the tents, wafting the unmistakable iron scent.
"What happened, son?"
Commander Kalamir asked firmly, stepping past Felinia.
"I don't know,"
Amandal said, his tone contemptuous.
"Well, something happened."
Kalamir folded his arms.
"How else do you explain the blood?"
Amandal didn't answer.
"Fine,"
Kalamir said.
"You best begin packing your things. We're breaking camp."
He turned to Ilden.
"Have you reached that cave?"
"Not yet," Ilden said. "My illusion might be halfway there."
Kalamir nodded.
"Good. You'll most definitely find those Yeltis before we reach the cave."
"Yeltis?" Amandal asked, intrigued.
"He takes everything as a challenge, doesn't he?"
When they first encountered the tracks, there was speculation about them belonging to the fabled Yeltis. The thought of their poisonous tusks made her shudder.
"Yes, Yeltis," Kalamir said. "Mistress Rudal suggested you go alone after them. I suppose she doesn't like you ignoring her advances,"
the commander added with a chuckle.
"But I doubt you would want to venture into the caves alone."
"I've fared far worse," Amandal said with a wry smile.
What did he mean by that? Kalamir didn't look convinced.
"If you say so."
He harumphed and walked to his tent. Once the commander was gone, Amandal turned to Ilden and backhanded the illusionist's arm.
"Why didn't you tell me about the Yeltis?"
Ilden set his jaw, glanced toward Kalamir's tent, then turned back to Amandal.
"Because you might want to go after them. By yourself."
Amandal laughed.
"You know me all too well."
"Well, shall I heal you or not?"
Silas asked. "There's nothing to heal," Amandal said. and turned to Felinia. "You're welcome to look," he added, his tone flirtatious.
"Oh, please."
"So you were gored in your sleep?" Ilden asked, his voice low. He looked eager to change the conversation. Amandal nodded curtly, and Felinia's attention sharpened. What was he hiding?
"Like the frostbite?" Silas asked. "What frostbite?" Felinia demanded.
Silas turned to Felinia.
"The day before we left, Amandal came to me because his feet were frozen. He said it happened while he was sleeping."
"How do you get frostbite in your sleep?" Felinia asked, confused.
"It was practically summer in Sarath when we left."
Amandal simply shrugged. Ilden glanced to Amandal, but attempted to look aloof.
"You are hiding something."
"What could it be?"
"I'll go ahead and pack our things," Amandal said to Ilden. "You should probably focus on the caves."
Ilden gave Amandal a sidelong glance, but his eyebrows arched in an enlightened expression. He nodded and hurried away.
"So am I needed or not?" Silas asked.
"I've already made myself clear," Amandal said with an exasperated expression. Silas nodded and followed Ilden from the tent. Felinia studied Amandal.
"Unexplainable frostbite and cuts," she thought. What was going on with the big oaf?
Whatever it was, she was going to find out.
"You know," she stepped close to Amandal, "you can tell me about the frostbite."
Amandal grinned.
"One day. Have you eaten yet?" "Does he take everything as a sexual challenge?"
Felinia pursed her lips before shaking her head.
"No, I packed my things and came to roust you."
"Then let's eat breakfast." Even in his thick coat, Captain Idara shivered. He stood at the edge of the camp, watching the Barjanists dismiss their shielding dome.
"They could have left me two Barjanists," he thought, grimacing. "I could have saved her."
This damned expedition hadn't run into anything these past few weeks. Who needed 12 Barjanists when freezing temperatures were the only danger? Once the dome collapsed, the members of the expedition gathered into their squads and formed a line. As usual, Idara moved to the rear. He and his sailors had stayed in the rear for most of the trek. The farther away he was from Kalamir and Vayam, the better. Distance was his only method for suppressing his anger.
"I will avenge you," Idara vowed to the vanished Jaiberan.
He had not been able to shake the image of his ship sinking to her watery grave. Even in his sleep, her death haunted him. Anger again began to simmer, but Idara managed to prevent his vengeance from contorting his face.
"Hold it in," he told himself.
They would reach Tardalum today, if the rumors in the camp were true. Behind him, Cluvis and the other crewmen trudged through the snow toward Idara, carrying some of the expedition's supplies. The sailors had been demoted to pack mules. They murmured as they approached, each equally disenchanted by the arduous trek.
"Only a little longer, men," Idara said. "Only a little longer."
Cluvis set his jaw as he eyed Idara. The first mate knew of Idara's vow for vengeance. Cluvis had even volunteered to help aid the captain.
"I'll have no qualms shoving a dagger into Vayam's pretty bosom," he had told Idara.
But a dagger was not the method Idara wanted to use. Surely there was something in that reliquary that would be less conspicuous than a bloody dagger. As the sailors gathered around, several pointed to the Lone Mountain. They were arguing about the reliquary's name, Tardalim.
"Halls of the Damned," Idara thought. "The realm of eternal suffering."
The murderous bastard called a command, and the expedition began marching across the snow. Westless, one of Idara's most loyal crewmen, grunted, shifted his pack, and pointed to the looming mountain.
"Do they think that's really the Halls of Damnation, Captain?"
Idara scowled.
"If not, I will make it so.